there, Neil O'Dowd. How are
you? Hello, how are you, Adrian?
Very, very good. In the midst of, all the world ills with the virus and our own upcoming election here, if there was one thing that we thought was done and dusted and ready for rollout, it would be that in the kerfuffle with the Brexit, that one thing was for sure, and that was, well, thanks be to God, there'll be no border, no hard border in Northern Ireland. As a matter of fact, everything is going to be just comfy, and everybody has signed on to it. So what else could go wrong? What could go wrong?
And it's 2020, Adrian. Anything that can go wrong. It's going wrong, unfortunately.
Now, before we get into that, your own involvement your collaboration in getting on the lead up to the Good Friday Agreement, you have been duly honored and in getting an honorary doctorate from University College Dublin for your own extensive efforts in leading up to the Good Friday Agreement. There, could you just fill us in somewhat on that, lest we forget that long before the appointment of George Mitchell as Special Envoy to Northern Ireland, the group which you had gathered here and convinced somehow to get together and get to the issue of Northern Ireland. Just reflect on that, if you will, for a minute.
Well, it was a very different time, obviously, and I go back to the days of immigration reform when you were there in the thick of the Donnelly and Morrison visa programs and the fight to get them passed through Congress. And one of the things we learned during those times was how to lobby Congress properly and how to set up the proper kind of networks and groups that could do that. So when it came to the question in Northern Ireland, I think the question I had was, could we do in Northern Ireland what we did with immigration? Because to this day, Adrian, the Morrison visas are the last piece of immigration legislation passed through the House of Representatives. So we put together a group of people, as you said, Bill Flynn, the great CEO of Mitchell of America, Tom Moran, people who, like Chuck Feeney, who had very special talents and gifts.
Joe Jameson, another one.
Bruce Morrison.
Yeah.
And we tackled it and we took a look at it and said, well, what would we do? And we decided what we would do was try and influence the next president of the United States. It was 1990. It was coming up to an election. George Bush was the president. He wasn't particularly active or interested. This is George Bush Sr. in the Irish issue. But we managed very luckily and with some skill, I have to say, on the part of a lot of people, including your uncle Paul O'Dwyer and your cousin Brian, to attract the attention of Bill Clinton, who was then a complete political unknown as governor of Arkansas. And what we discovered to our delight was that Clinton was very interested in this issue, had spent time at Oxford University and saw the beginning of the Irish civil rights movement, which he was quite conversant with. And he was talking about Bernadette Devlin and people of that era. Mm-hmm. So we knew then we had something very special. And it was a time, Adrian, if you remember, where great strides were being made in the Middle East in peace and South Africa, and people felt that there was no way the Irish problem could go into a new century, that we had to do something. And the something we did was bring Bill Clinton on board, and then everything absolutely changed. As you know, once the August 31st this year was the 26th anniversary of the IRA ceasefire, which I think was the culmination of our work. We had succeeded in getting Gerry Adams' visa to come to America So it's a long-winded way, but we're just saying that we used the power of Irish America in a way it had never been used before, with a group of people who had never been associated with Irish events before in the same way they would be. And we discovered great leaders like Bill Flynn and Chuck Feeney and Bruce Morrison and people like that who were the highest caliber, Tom Moran. So we helped, and once obviously Clinton got his teeth into it, then it just became a matter of pushing it further and further. And Adrian, I'm delighted to say that this week we saw another example of it. I know we're going to get to it in a minute, but to see the man who most people think would be the next American president stand up and say to the British, don't you mess with our Good Friday Agreement. That was a profound moment for me, because that was an indication that all the work that was done, not just by us, but by AOHs, by Irish groups all over the country, by you through your show, by Anya, by people who were working non-stop on this issue, that it really has registered that there is an Irish lobby. And you have great guys like Richie Neal and then Nancy Pelosi as well. All that didn't come from nowhere, is what I'm saying. It came from that beginning way back in the 90s.
It didn't take long to get the reaction from months. Well, first of all, Nancy Pelosi, who has had tremendous not only influence, but she has been in Ireland. She has been on and a powerful voice, obviously. But she is and has been on board saying, hey, no trade deal with America and with the UK unless the Good Friday Agreement, the Belfast Agreement, is adhered to, end of story. So even before Joe Biden and many others got on board, Nancy Pelosi was there with a very clear message, and that was when everything was going well. So it was, can you just bring us to what a rattle we got when it was like an April Fool's joke when we heard that Boris, I was going to say Boris Karloff, but anyway, it's fine.
Yeah, I woke up one morning to the headlines that the British were not honouring the no hard border part of the Brexit agreement that they'd made with the Irish government. And it was just an incredible moment when you think of all the worst things the British have been doing. Certainly this guy, Johnson, seems to be a complete buffoon. He has screwed up the COVID issue over there as well. And there were two explanations given. One was that they were using the Irish border issue as leverage to try and get a better deal from the European countries as they left under the Brexit deal, or in fact they were using the Irish border as the reason why they weren't interested in the deal and they were going to walk away and say, look, we had to walk away because they wouldn't agree with us on the Irish border. So either way, it was using the Irish border issue for his own ends to try and push through his own version of Brexit past the European Union negotiators. But I have to say, Adrian, it's rebounded very badly on him. Even yesterday, someone like Amal Clooney, George Clooney's wife, resigned her position on the Human Rights Advisory Group in Britain because of what Johnson was trying to do. And a tremendous amount of Tory MPs have stood up and said, we made an international agreement with the Irish government and the European Union. We cannot now break it. And the important point here, Adrian, is that if it's an international agreement and it's legally binding, if you change a sentence, if you change a word, what they're saying, oh, we only change it a little bit, it doesn't matter how much you change it. If you change it, if you put in debt instead of and, you are not approving the same contract that was agreed between the two countries. So if they are trying to get away with this idea that we only change it a little bit, that is not possible. It is no longer the same agreement. So the agreement is void, and they know that very well.
Neil, my guest friend, Neil O'Dowd, Let me ask Anila about the possibility. We're so used to saber rattling here every day in our own political system that sometimes, you know, things are thrown out there to be a distraction from real problems. Is there a possibility that, you know, that this, you know, that Boris decided, you want to know something, I'll throw it out there anyway, it'll keep the pot boiling and it'll get me on the front page, as in fact we see here in our own country with respect to media. Is there any chance that was only fired out there to get a bit of attention?
I don't think so, Adrian. I think what COVID and what this Brexit deal has exposed is leaders like Trump and Johnson are not very good leaders. Trump obviously is all over the place every day on whatever happens to be the topic of the day. But Johnson thought that he could slip this through and there'd be a minimum of objection. But what he found was that there are a number of highly principled people in Britain, including his own Attorney General, who said, no, we agreed an international treaty. We can't do this. We can't renege on an international treaty because the next time we warn, say, Iran about breaking international law, they're just going to say, well, you did it when it suited you. So I'm happy to see a lot of British leading political figures, even from within his own party,
right,
stand up
and
say, you know, you can't do this. You can't break an international agreement.
John Major and Blair, you know, those who could, who might suit them just to say nothing, but I think it's decent people are now saying, wait a minute, this is way over the top. Let's not even give it any, you know, any breath. Knock it off. But just again, what would that gain in terms of, let's say, is this a test? Is this one more, you know, God rest my cousin Frank Durkin, who...
I wish Frank could have seen this. Everything him and Paul said about the Brits has come through.
Frank in particular, again, famously quoted as saying that, you know, the British government, the only justice they ever understood came out of the barrel of a gun. My God,
that would be Frank,
But
no, I think it's a thought-out strategy. There's a guy called Dominic Cummins who's like in the Prime Minister's ear all the time. He's a very right-wing, anti-Irish senior civil servant who has enormous power in Britain. And this seems to be the kind of trick that he plays where he takes a very extreme position and then if he finds he can't hold that position, he just step back a little bit of it and but still try and be as hardline as possible. They're doing this for one of two reasons. One, they want to walk away from Brexit with no deal, and they're using the Irish border issue as the reason to do so. Or two, they're using the Irish border threat as leverage to get better negotiations, because the negotiations have been going very badly with the European Union about withdrawal. And what Johnson could well be doing, what I suspect he's actually doing, is putting the Irish issue on the table and saying, well, we can't deliver that and unless you do something to placate my followers and my supporters. So it's high level brinkmanship, but it's also very stupid because the European Union is not going to walk into a trap like that. They're far more skilled and adept than the British negotiators on this issue because they've been doing it for years and years. So I think what we're going to end up with, Adrian, is somewhat like what we have here is a huge mess. I mean, I read an article yesterday in The Guardian which said they interviewed the trucking industry guy, and the trucking industry guy said, If they walk away with no Brexit, there will be 7,000 British trucks, 7,000 lined up waiting to go through the channel back to Britain if this happens. So you can imagine the kind of craziness that would bring about with international transportation, with having to show passports everywhere, with all the kind of advances that have been made suddenly being reversed, and you throw COVID in on top of that, and you have the mixture of a real, really bad British stew.
Would, as a result of this, I mean, there is a bottom line question here, and that is, why would Britain at this stage of the game want, in the few remaining months since this, you know, the current agreement expires on December 31st, why is it better for them, or what's the reasoning to have a no deal and say, let Europe peg off and do their own thing? We'll paddle our
well, they save billions of dollars in money that they owe the European Union, which is one big thing. But also, it plays into the whole Fox News type coverage that they have in Britain of this, which is, you know, we are ruled Britannia, we are the most powerful nation, we shouldn't be putting up with these terrible frogs and Germans and all these awful people on the continent, all of which is complete BS, because nobody forced them into the European Union in the first day ever. They willingly became part of it. So they've used the European Union as a scapegoat, and it dries up the right-wing support when they look like they're attacking Europe. So there are many good reasons for Johnson politically trying to shore up his base through demonising the European Union, basically. But the European Union is a widely respected organisation throughout Europe and indeed throughout America. And what the beautiful thing about this has been, you're absolutely right about Nancy Pelosi, but there's also guys like Richie Neal, the chairman of the Ways and Means, yeah, who's very, very friendly with Nancy Pelosi. There's guys like Joe Biden, who right now is favored to become president. This is a whole new dimension, and one that I'm proud to say people in Irish America built, that not only are they going to get it from the Europeans, but the Americans. If Biden says no deal with the U.S., for Britain if they mess with the Good Friday Agreement, that is incredibly serious, because they have made it one of their main points that they'd be able to do new deals with countries like America, particularly America, because of the huge trading thing that they have with them, relationship with them. So, you know, Johnson has put his foot in the cowshed, basically, and I don't think he can shake it off. Because he's got the Americans riled up, he's got his own people riled up, and he's been recognized to be completely untrustworthy. When you have an international agreement, Adrian, you cannot break that agreement just willy-nilly. And this is what they've been trying to do, which is just outrageous.
Can we switch topics to, indeed, one that that brings us a lot closer to home here? As you have written in today's Irish Central, the heading says COVID and losing the American dream, and it again strikes home to so many of us, and somehow, being insular as we're inclined to be, we think of just Manhattan as being, you know, the epicenter of not only the economic and real effects of COVID, but also because we're able to relate to so many of our Irish immigrants and indeed Irish Americans, and what COVID and what the effects of COVID are actually doing to business. Can you walk us through your column in today's Irish Central?
Well, I think, Adrian, it's something that has really struck me in the last few months, the number of Irish legal people who have packed up and gone home because their businesses, and let's face it, the younger Irish are still overwhelmingly in the bar business, construction business will be the two biggest businesses. And both of those businesses are suffering dreadfully. So they have no jobs. They're away from their family. Their money is running out. They're in difficulty, you know, in terms of trying to get back to Ireland and come back here because you have to quarantine and there's no guarantee you get back in. So I think a lot of them have frankly just given up and gone home. In fact, that's been widely reported to us by people that people who had perfectly good jobs or even own businesses are basically unable to keep going because there's no revenue. And it's a very sad thing for a community to see the youngest of them, of us head back home again when there would have been no reason for them to do so in normal times, and they would have been part of that. If you go back, say, to the era of the Mike Cartys and the Austin Delaneys and the great Irish bar owners who hired so many young Irish and took care of them and gave them jobs, you know, this was another generation. Many of them were doing the same things, helping out with benefits for ill. I mean, the bartenders and the construction companies were the biggest donors to people in need in terms of people who had medical illnesses and needed help and all that.
But it was reciprocal.
So all that just seems to be getting cut, undercut right now. And we're looking at, you know, some great Irish bars, some great Irish construction companies that are not going to make it.
Right.
And it's very, very sad because, as you well know better than anyone, the Irish community was under enormous pressure anyway because of no immigration. So this has just added a really bad thing to the whole mix and made it very difficult for the community to push ahead and grow and widen its scope. It's just not going to happen.
You know, did we think 6 months ago or before 6 months ago that we would be speaking about the plight of the legal Irish immigrant, you know, here, and again, you've pointed out, of course, the tremendous respect that employers, those in the bar and the industry, the hospitality, and in the construction industry, had in terms of placing and taking care of immigrants who were here undocumented. But when you see that, first of all, that nobody in these industries were there playing around. They were massive contributors to these businesses. They cannot hold out. There's nothing for them to hold out for. But it kind of then brings us to the reality that, you know, there is no magic, you know, bullet that is coming the way here that's going to correct this.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, when we had the undocumented issue, we could try for Congress for relief and pass bills like Morrison and Donnelly. But with this, I mean, I just was speaking to my nephew who came back from Ireland from spending some time over there, and telling me that four of his five friends that he came to America with, who formed his whole social circle, have now moved back. All of them are legal, but they just can't make it in the business they're in. And he's struggling with his business. And everybody, you're struggling with yours, I'm struggling with mine. This is like a catastrophe on top of a very dangerous time for people who are trying to make livings in America because, you know, the whole backbone of the community, you're absolutely right, was the bar owners and construction companies reaching out, helping out, giving guys a start, getting waitress jobs for women, helping out, particularly with benefits for people who are ill, you know, creating the whole Irish atmosphere, which I think now is very damaged for the time being anyway. And opens up the question, Adrian, what will happen? I mean, obviously, looking into the future, it's very hard to see, but could Biden do an immigration bill that would help everybody? Perhaps. Mm-hmm. I think it might be an important thing to bear in mind. He's certainly, you know, favorable on the issue. So it could be that it could reverse, but right now, You know, like, I was speaking to one guy yesterday who used to work with me as a designer. He said, I have no work for 4 months. I might as well go home and stay with my mother for the winter, because at least I'll save on rent. And it's very sad to hear a 40-year-old man talking like in those terms.
Yeah, and of course,
normally he was a very skilled designer. He would move from job to job if he had to. But there's nothing here for him now. Nothing.
Wait, I don't think this is particularly peculiar to as an Irish issue, but for those who say, you know, another stimulus, a good walloper of a stimulus this time around might see us, you know, carry us to, you know, the grand opening, as it were, of all of these businesses. There actually isn't a grand opening in sight. But
that's the thing. If somebody said to me that, you know, we passed the 6 months to St. Patrick's Day this week, 17th of September, I can't tell you with any conviction or sense of knowledge that the St. Patrick's Day parade will be held, which is the centerpiece of the Irish
right.
in New York. I don't think you can tell me. This total and utter uncertainty about everything. You're right. If you're holding out for an immigration bill, or if you're holding
right.
out for something that you could say, well, I can hang on to one more winter. But there's nothing. There's only, hopefully, the defeat of COVID and the slow return to normal. But most of the experts put that down as towards the middle to end of next year. So
yeah.
that's a long haul.
Oh.
And people are tired of it, and I'm tired of it, you're tired of it.
Yeah.
It's just day after day you seem to be winning against disease, and then you hear more people are getting it. Like in Ireland, there seems to be a big resurgence. So it's worrying on its own terms, separate from any other issue.
And, you know, Ireland was being held as a beacon.
It just seemed like last week we were all very jealous of Ireland.
And now, as we'll hear from Kevin O'Connor shortly, you know, the county of Dublin heading into a lockdown again, pubs not being able to open and be put on the long finger. My God.
It's very, very tough.
Yeah, as you were speaking there about your nephew and his friends heading back for Ireland, heading back to Ireland, it's not as if they're that's a golden opportunity there. It's almost like hanging out on a season.
It is. it's exactly like hanging out, hoping for things to get better with no definite possibility of that. I mean, I know it's happening in every community and it's happening all over the United States, but it's a sad day for, say, a young man or woman who started their own business, who are doing well, and suddenly find, you know, their whole list of customers has disappeared, everything's gone, nobody has the money. It's a crisis that we never thought we'd face because, well, you know, our father's time, there was polio, there was a lot of diseases that were very damaging, but they were all gone by the time we grew up. But now this particular disease is as bad as anything we've ever seen, including the 1918 pandemic.
Yeah. Well, you've been very uplifting. I'm delighted.
I'm always uplifting. You know, when I think I'm going to talk to Adrian, I think, what's the worst thing I can tell him?
Yeah. Well, so far you're doing very good. Is there any... I wish it were, and I know that we do wish that it was indeed that the story was a little brighter than it was. But I want to thank you, number one, for coming on today at this time when there is so much distracting news and everybody wondering what's fake news, a new term that we learned in the last 4 years, what's fake news, what's not, and so forth. But again, for many people who say, wait a minute, that it can't be that the one issue, the one agreement written in stone going back to 1998 is now being scuttled, even as you say, and I think your point that, let's just change a word or two here. Just let them get used to it. Sure, if we get away with that.
Exactly. You've hit it right on the head. Yeah. And what do you think of all this if you're a unionist and you realize, you know, they would buy and sell me in the morning if Johnson wouldn't give a fiddler's damn about how the North and unionism is faring. So, I mean, there's an awful lot of truth being revealed at this time as well, which is good, which is the sheer incompetence of the British government. It's stunning in this area that they thought they could just change an international treaty and get away with it.
Oh, boy.
I'd cheer you up anyway.
No, thank you. Now, it's
don't break your leg on the way out.
Okay. It's a very serious topic and one that, again, we know where to go in terms of being able to, you know, following your own involvement long before and leading up to the Good Friday Agreement. And we, for those who, you know, those who were involved on our side, again, take the Bill Flynn's or the Tom Moran's or any of them, my God, they would be rolling.
They would.
You know, to even think that this was even thrown out there, even if it was a crack, you know?
Exactly. I mean, as you said, you thought it was some kind of a joke. That's what I thought. I mean, what the hell do they think they're doing now?
Wow. You know. Thanks, Neil.
Okay. Thank you, Adrian, okay. And, have a great weekend.
You too.
I'll cheer you up the next time. I'll tell some Mayo jokes.
And you did already. And I didn't miss that, you know, crack with the Sam Maguire either, you know. And, thank you very much.
Well, forget about that.
All right.
You know, COVID will be long gone before you get your hands on that.
Go away. All right. Friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network USA, irishradio.com worldwide.